today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Hey, Patrick, why are you shaking?
Am I shaking? I guess it must be anticipation.
You mean to hear today's episode?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm shaking too. Okay, Patrick, I think it's time for another patron episode today.
Okay.
Here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
The way these patron episodes work is we have certain supporters of the show, and they come on every so often, and they get to pick the topic. And yep. One of those very early supporters, I believe, was Mr. Stephen Routledge over there in Scotland. Hello, Stephen.
Afternoon or morning, Jim and Patrick.
Yeah.
Yes. Is it for you guys?
Amazing how that works. Astronomy, I guess, right? The world
Sunday
spinning
morning.
Around.
Yeah.
Physics and stuff like that, yeah.
Things I don't really know much about.
It's complicated stuff.
I had a friend once in college who, in order to get his science elective, he signed up for astronomy. He was like, how hard can that be? Just learning about planets and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Turned out to be one of the hardest classes he ever took.
It's not that far Rolling removed from rocket science, yeah.
I think he was thinking like, you know, because you learn about like the planets when you're like elementary school. Like, it's just fun stuff. You have a mobile with like planets flying around,
yeah.
Right?
That's a little wheel.
That's right. Okay, where am I here? So, patron episodes, supporters of the show, they get to pick the topic. This one will be really interesting, and I hope maybe other people will sort of latch onto this as topics as well. We would love to hear it. But tell us, Stephen, what you wanted to discuss today.
Well, it's inspired by two of our mutual friends from the community, Mike Wagner and EPJ, Akopok Jimmy, the legend that is that man. And it was basically something that he said about music that gives you goosebumps. And the reason Mike Wagner's kind of involved in the inspiration, even if he doesn't know it yet, is because his Twitter handle is all-time top five.
Yeah.
And I've had an all-time top five for quite a long time, and it's only been a movement of one song within that time over the last sort of 10 years, and that's purely due down to my own sort of self-imposed rules. And I'm not saying these are the best songs of all time.
Right.
I'm not even necessarily saying they're the best songs by that artist. But they're my favourite songs of all time. And I think there's a big difference between those two things. A lot of time you see lists where it's, oh, this is the best, and you know, it's almost impossible to quantify that in such a subjective thing as music. But yeah, this is just my personal top five songs of all time. Yeah, thought it'd be good to talk about that and sort of see what you guys think of it. I mean, some of these songs you will definitely know, but maybe there's possibly one on here that you won't. But I'm confident the other four you'll be pretty familiar with.
So listeners who have heard Stephen in the past, there's a couple of artists that will show up here that you will not be surprised about. Right? And that's fine. Well, that's good.
Yeah. And I was going to say, though, Stephen is someone who, yeah, there are a couple artists, you know, he's come back to, and you might look at some of his, you know, social media profiles and be able to figure out what one of them might be. But having said that, when Stephen started giving us his new music recommendations, Jim, and he was the first one that started that whole community of contributing each month, which is now one of our, you know, at least in my opinion, the things that we're known for, is how eclectic it was. You know, there'd be heavy metal music mixed in with folk music, and then there'd be straight up rock and all kinds of different stuff. So to me, I was trying to think like, well, maybe I could pick out maybe one artist or maybe two. But and also, if you've listened to some of his patron episodes in the past too, about bands like Manson or, you know, things that in America we never really got beyond playing at very small clubs or things like that, I just am kind of mystified as to what this is going to be. And I got to tell you, I'm so looking forward to it. And I'm so happy that I don't know anything as we record this. So I'm really excited.
That's good. I mean, I will stop just by saying that basically myself, I mentioned that, sort of alluded to that, my self-imposed rule, and this is my rule really for all lists of all-time greatest stuff, there has to be a 10-year moratorium between something happening and it being allowed to be included in an all-time list.
Okay.
Because you overcome recency bias.
Yep.
And it has to stand the test of time. If a decade later you're still like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever heard, then yeah, it's in. And
got it.
When we get further down the list, that will then become apparent why that's, and I'll explain that change, I guess. But that's it, really. That's the rules.
Cool. Okay, now, and I'll say one last thing here, too. I think it's amazing that you even were able to do this. I'm not sure I could come up with...
It would be hard,
It sounds like a cop-out or something, but really, I don't know. Could you do that, Patrick? Could you think of your top five favorite songs?
I mean, sitting here right now, I think it would be pretty hard to do, but So it sounds like you, like you said, you've been keeping a list in your head. I was kind of thinking, well, if I'd started doing this, you know, a while back, and I had a lot of time to like sort of turn it over and put things on and off and think about it, you know, maybe make a top 50 and start whittling down or something like that, I could do it. But so I guess, is that how you did it, Stephen? How long have you had this list in your mind?
Oh, it's been in my list ever since I've heard all of these songs, really, that they've been in
my mold.
And certainly the number one, when we get to that, I mean, that was instantly, it was kind of like my John Peel Teenage Kicks moment. It's like, this is the greatest thing I have ever heard in my life. And yeah, so it's just a case of, I can't remember when I first stumbled, but it was like, okay, someone maybe said to me, what's your top five songs of all time? And it took me about 10 seconds to list them. Yeah, the number one was never in doubt, and the other four came pretty quickly. Hmm. And it's not really changed that much. There is one song that's currently in contention for maybe moving into the top five, but it's still too young.
Got it.
It's got another 5 years to go. So it's certainly be in my top 25 or whatever. You know, if you want to push that list out and say, okay, these are just my favorite songs of all time, we create like a top 100 or whatever, you know, a massive list.
Yeah.
But for the all-time top five, like, this is definitive. It's not past the test of time yet. It may well do, but we shall see. Come back in 5 or 6 years. All
right. Okay, so how do you want to do this? We're going to count down from 5 to 1. You want to talk about number five first, or you want to play it first, or how do you want to do it?
Yeah, let's just play it first, and then we can talk about it, and then, because then Patrick will hear it rather than me telling what it is, and that's
perfect.
Well, he's going to see now the list, so he's going to see nevertheless.
I'm not looking. I'm turning away.
Look away now.
At least there's a surprise factor with this first song that we play.
Shelter me from the powder and the finger. Cover me with the thought that pulled the trigger. Just think of me as one you never figured was gonna fade away so young.
All right, Powderfinger.
Hard to push stop on that one, isn't it, Jim?
Yes, very hard.
All right, so tell us about that song, and I guess you mentioned specific versions of songs too.
Yeah, so yeah, listeners familiar with Neil Young's work will realize that's not the Rust Never Sleeps version. It's from World, which on a previous guest episode I talked about how that was my favorite album of all time. Mm-hmm. It was the album that introduced me to Neil Young. And I mean, the reason I chose that version of this song, I mean, out of all the songs on this list, that's the one that gives me the least goosebumps, which is why it's number five. But Neil Young is so important to me, just music, and just so important to me, full stop, in what his music means to me. And this song stood out enough that when I first started using email, I put the line about shelter me from the powder and the finger, cover me from the thought that pulled the trigger. Just think of me, that one that never figured would fade away so young, with so much left undone. Remember me to my love, you know I'll miss her. And I put that as my email sign off, like in a quote at the bottom. Nice. Until people just kept saying, are you all right? Is everything okay? I was like, yeah, I just really love this song. And, you know, I'll use that as some of my, you know, either Powderfinger or variations of it as my online handles for a lot of things. And it's one of those fascinating songs. It's very similar to a lot of his other songs, like Don't Cry No Tears or Winter Long. It's got that similar sort of feel and structure to it. It's also quite enigmatic, because I've heard there's multiple ways you can spin this song. Mm-hmm. You can take it as just a straight story song. I've heard it as an allegory for taking drugs, for sex, or for, you know, whatever else. You know, there's no kind of like, this is exactly what this is about. But specifically, it has to be the World version, because that was Neil and Crazy Horse at their absolute peak of their powers, I think. Or certainly the Poncho version of Crazy Horse at the peak of their powers. This is so much a more powerful version than the earlier versions. Yeah. It's got so much more. I mean, you just hear it in the guitar tone. It's just wilder. They're rocking so much harder. It's noisier. And you get everything of Neil kind of within there. You get kind of like the searing lead guitar, the feedback, but you also get the bits where his voice is great and the bits where his voice can't quite make it. Yeah, all the things that are so great about it and just endear him to me so much. yeah, the fact that it was so instrumental, that album, in me getting, you know, once I heard World, I was like, my musical outlook changed from that point onwards. You know, from the music I've been listening to suddenly I was off on, right, I've got to get as much of this guy as I can into my ears.
But you raise a really interesting point here too, which is that when you just examine the song itself, it's a very well-written song, like you said, but it's the performance, I think, that really elevates it, but that would put it, you know, into the stratosphere, right? And what I think is really interesting about that is it's a mid-tempo song. It's not, but yet it has so much power to it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. 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 The whole album has that. It just punches you in the face. Yeah. That whole album is like a palate cleanser for me. If I get lost, I just go back, put World on, sorts me out, gets me straight. Yeah.
And, you know, it's so interesting from my perspective. One, I never really knew that album all that well. But after we did that episode, I listened to it a lot and really came to appreciate how great it was. You know, I always sort of thought to myself, well, you know, the older stuff is going to be better, right, than all that stuff. But yeah, in that sense, incredible. And I think this version shows the kind of the weariness of the narrator of the song, which is fascinating to me because he's dead, right? And he's singing, telling you the story. So he's coming from somewhere beyond when you finally piece it all together. And I think this version kind of has that weariness to it. And the other thing to me is how many different people have covered this song. I find that really fascinating, the list. And I knew I had read somewhere or heard somewhere that he gave this song to Lynyrd Skynyrd to record. And I went here on the internet and just confirmed that that is that was the case.
Yeah,
it was before Ronnie Van Zant died in the plane crash before they had a chance to do so. Mm-hmm. And I just think about that, like, what would have, you know, that version of Lynyrd Skynyrd, what would that have sounded like if they were recording, you know?
Yeah, it was written a lot earlier.
Amazing. Yeah.
Before it appeared on Rush Never Sleeps on the, is it The Hitchhiker? The one from the vaults that came out.
Like the 75 version or something. Yeah. So, I mean, imagine that powerful Skynyrd band recording that song that had not come out, you know, that was just a Neil Young song. That would have been, they would have been known for that. Like, that would have been amazing too. So just so fascinating in so many ways. And one of the greatest opening lines, I think, in music history, right? Yeah. I mean, just, it grabs you.
It sets the scene immediately.
It does. Yeah.
You're right there.
I mean, it's amazing. You are right there. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number 4 on his list. All right.
Leave your home, change your name, live alone, eat your cake, bend the line, cry baby cry, oh the waters are rising, still no surprising you, then the light, cry baby cry, man it's all been forgiven, swans all swim, I'll explain everything to the geeks, oh the very best of us, string ourselves up for love. Oh, the very best of us, string ourselves up for love. Oh, the very best of us, string ourselves up for love.
All right, tell us about that song.
Although this is only number 4, this is the most recent edition. I was getting shivers just listening to that again. I've said it how many times. It does not fail to just make the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when that chorus kicks in. You know, it's just probably like a lot of people, I discovered The National through the Boxer album. I got the album. I thought, yeah, this is pretty good. I like, you know, I thought it's decent. And then when the following album, High Violet, came out, I was like, oh, man, this is, I thought that was the best album that came out that year. And it was their sort of critical peak. And this is, yeah, the closing track on there and the best song. And I can't explain this one because no one really knows what this song is about. It doesn't really make much sense. Yeah, you try and look for a meaning to it. It's not, it's just words. But with the music that you put to it, it just does something amazing. It shouldn't work, but it's just overwhelming almost. I don't know how you guys feel about that song, but for me, it's staggering how good a song that really I've got no idea what it's about can move me.
Well, and you didn't mention the name of the song is Vander Lyle Crybaby Geeks.
Exactly. I mean, it's nonsense.
There you go. Yep.
It's nonsense. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what you guys think of this one, but...
I mean, sitting here on a Sunday morning and listening to that kind of wash over you, it's, you know, it does have that effect. It really does. And it's a song where, I mean, I think that the National are a band that require very attentive listening, right? And at least for me, like, I've never been able to put them on in the background or listen to them in the car where there's distractions and noise and be able to try to make sense of what they're doing. But I do think that they reward a very attentive listening. And when you can be really still and kind of get with the song, it is one of those, you know, tracks that can move you, especially with the strings sweeping in different directions. I mean, it is almost like being in the ocean or something like that and having it buffet you back and forth. And I appreciate that about them. You know, they don't necessarily, at least for me, work in a casual environment. And that's good. I mean, I think there should be music like that, that, you know,
absolutely, yeah,
requires that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So. What about you, Jim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we've discussed this in the past. I haven't, for whatever reason, haven't really done that and sat down with the National's music,
yeah,
and let that happen, because I agree with you, the times I've played it, it just hasn't stuck. And it's, yeah, probably, mm-hmm, because I haven't given it that amount of attention that it deserves.
But so, but yeah, also you do get bands like that. You do get bands that you just do not click with.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
We've mentioned Mike Wagner before. Yeah, he's, and I know you guys are both big fans of this band, The Replacements. Just, I get why people like them,
yep,
but I cannot dislike them.
Yeah,
so it's not, right, like, no, it's like I'm, well, saying it's rubbish.
Go. That's it.
And I can, yeah, yeah, I can appreciate that it's got the quality, but it doesn't connect with me. Yep. It just,
you're
doesn't
not alone
move
on
me.
That, Stephen.
Yeah, but on paper, yeah, it should be perfect, yeah, for me. You know.
It's interesting, too, when you were talking about Weld, it, maybe in a different way, like you instantly heard Powderfinger, instantly, like, this is going to be one of my favorite songs of all time. Instantly, it's going to change my musical direction. But I think this song might be different in that sense, right? It takes a while to worm its way into your mind and really find a place there, especially with no clear narrative lyrically to latch on to. You know, it's so interesting. It's,
well, I think
it's a really intriguing pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, you're talking about the not taking. I mean, they can be a bit pretentious, you know. So, I mean, I can understand how people can bounce off the National totally, and
yep,
and some of the stuff I have done. For me, it did hit pretty quickly, this song, when I first heard it. But I think I've got a friend, Terry Smith, who he always says, "Are you a music or a lyrics person?" And I'm like, I'm very much a music person, and I think this song kind of proves it, because the lyrics don't really matter. But the music, it's all about the music on this one.
Yeah.
There could be almost going, there is a melancholy both to the music and to the lyrics. In fact, there's melancholy to all these songs, actually, which is probably the overriding sort of theme. But the music is what's important on this one. The lyrics, yeah, are less so, you know. They, okay, could change the lyrics and it would still work, you know.
Right. Got it. So number three on your list, I think, is an artist we're all going to agree on. There a funeral if you're going to that way.
Hard to turn off.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
No kidding. You want to know where that's the beauty of a great, yeah, song. It's like you want to know where that song is going. What is happening with that song? So that's Graham Parsons' $1,000 Wedding.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, like you said, probably everyone listening will be familiar, and if they're not, oh man, you got a treat to go and just go listen to Grievous Angel, the album. I mean, come on, just go, just do it now. Stop, pause this podcast, listen to Grievous Angel, and then come back.
Yes.
Never mind melancholy. This is just straight out welcome to country music, the music of pain. this is one of the saddest songs ever written, probably. And the performance, it just takes it to another level. Again, when I discovered Gram Parsons through the Jayhawks, they got me into Americana and opened my ears up to sort of that country influence, and it quickly led me to Gram Parsons. And when I heard him singing, he's the only singer whose voice can almost move me to tears, you know. It's just so beautiful. And it's just a tragedy that he had so much talent and so little motivation and so much recreational bad habits. In that song, I mean, it's just a crushingly, crushingly sad song. But it's even got some humour in there. It's like, oh, I'd even like to see a mean old mama. You know,
it does.
There's moments that can make you smile, and then you're bawling your eyes out later on. You know, it's supposed to be a funeral, such a sad, sad day. It's just really, really powerful song. Then you've got the great music from, like, you had a hot band playing in the background. You know, Elvis's band basically playing there. You got Emmylou coming in, and then the two of them, two are possibly the greatest sort of like combined voices in history when they sing together, and they just soar off into the heavens, and it's like, oh, this is just, it's so beautiful yet so painful. It's this great dichotomy of this something, how can something be so beautiful be so upsetting and sad? And that's what makes it work. That's why it's so good. It's just one of the greatest songs ever written and one of the greatest performances of it. Just absolutely stellar.
I would agree, and as I was saying earlier, I mean, this would be an automatic, for me, top 20, you know, to start whittling down to the top five. And I love everything Gram Parsons has done, from the Byrds, International Submarine Band, Flying Burrito Brothers, the stuff he did solo. But this is his greatest song and his greatest performance. And like you said, Stephen, if he had worked that hard on everything and gotten it so perfect, it's amazing what he could have done. But to me, it's that, you know, distilling all those classic country and soul songs that he sang. I mean, on the second side of this record, he does an amazing cover of Love Hurts. But in this one,
it's just staggeringly good.
It is. And in this one, he's written that song himself, you know, a song that good that can stand along all those old country covers that he would play. And, you know, greater than Hickory Wind, in my opinion, which is a great Gram Parsons song. But this one is just so perfect. And
yeah, it's better. It's more complex.
It is. Yeah, it works on so many more different levels. And it's crushingly sad. I mean, that one has melancholy. But this one, like you said, is just brief. I mean, the line, took some friends out drinking, and it was lucky they survived. I mean,
why doesn't somebody just spike his drink? Why don't you
exactly.
do it in some old day?
I mean,
there's no subtlety here, even though it's beautiful.
Amazing.
It's like,
it is. And his singing is great. And then it's almost, in, you know, some ways, that second part when Emmylou comes in right there and it just begins to accelerate, your real goosebump moment right there. It's incredible. It's immense. And I don't know how anyone really could argue with this one. Just so great.
And then you add in the fact that it came out posthumously, you know, it makes it even sadder.
I know. That's right. Wow. I'm getting depressed, man.
I know.
Yeah. Sorry. It's not going to get much better, I'm afraid.
It'll do that. I just find Gram Parsons to be one of the most fascinating figures in popular music, right? He just sort of fluttered in and made this huge mark on artists more than listeners to some extent,
in many ways.
Right? You know, didn't become a huge star, but left this huge mark on music, and then just sadly went away. Like, it's really an amazing story.
You know, Jim, your point is so interesting too, the influence he had on other people. Yet think about Emmylou and the guys, you know, James Burton and people that, why did you ask yourself, why did they put up with his, you know, behavior of not showing up, not trying, being so wasted he couldn't, you know, do anything? It was because when they saw him, that spark that he had, that moment of genius, it all made it worth it, because that could happen again.
He was so good. He'd put up with anything. On this next one, Jim, you need to let it get to the chorus.
Okay, this is number two.
All right.
I'll never learn that I
That's the first time I've ever heard that song. I'll say right now. The band is Embrace. The song is My Weakness is None of Your Business. And it sounds to me like the best Oasis song I've never heard.
It's funny you should mention that. Yes. Had you heard that before, Patrick?
As a matter of fact, I have. And I'll tell you guys that Stephen is a patron at a certain level where we send him CDs every now and then. We go shopping for him. So I guess I don't need to send you this one that I picked up recently. I was thinking to myself in the store, I wonder if he's into those guys because I love this album. And so I got that, but I'm guessing you already have it. So
I have that album, and I have all the versions of the singles and everything from that album. Yes, okay. I'll give this one to
Jim then.
All right,
since
good.
I've never heard him before.
There you go.
It is a fantastic album.
It really
fantastic
is.
Album.
Yeah.
What did you think of it, Jim? Other than it being the best Oasis song you've ever heard,
I mean, it was fantastic. It had all those elements that you love in a really well done pop song. But better than that, I mean, it's like had this great like sort of soaring quality, but not overdone, not overblown. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, really, that's great. Well, yeah. You could say it's slightly overblown. I specifically asked for that version because that's from an EP that they recorded after the album came out called The Abbey Road Sessions. It was a 2-CD, 8-track EP you put together where they re-recorded some of the songs from that first album that Patrick's talking about there, The Good Will Out, at Abbey Road Studios with a live orchestra. So that version we heard was live. And the orchestra were playing live with them in the room.
Wow, that's cool.
And for me, as a musician, the idea of playing a song that I wrote with a live full orchestra backing you up, that's like the ultimate kind of like, you couldn't possibly, the adrenaline rush of that must be beyond anything possible. Yeah, I mean, this band, for those not familiar, and you were right on the money there, Jim, talking about the best Oasis song you never heard, because they were right in that zone in the Britpop era, and there was a lot of hype about their first single, a song called All You Good, Good People, which is also staggeringly good.
It is.
And, I mean, that album went to number one over here. I was fortunate to see them on the tour for that first album. And there's a lot of similarities to Oasis because they've got two brothers. They're from the north of England. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of them sings, one of them plays guitar. They're from Leeds rather than Manchester. They sit in that perfect sweet spot between Oasis and The Verve, who we've talked about before as well. They've got that widescreen symphonic quality that The Verve got, but they're not as weird as The Verve.
Yep.
They're not as out there, but they're not as meat and potatoes as Oasis. But yeah, you're right when you say about it not being overblown as well, Jim, because what I love is they give you two verses. They don't give you that chorus straight off. They make you wait for it. The strings build up and you think, oh, here we go for the chorus. Now we're coming back around again. It's a classic thing that's been done a million times. Boy, when it comes in and then those strings soar, it's just amazing. But then you then put on the lyric on top of it, my weakness is none of your business. I mean, what a great sentiment, and how much does that kind of speak to people in so many times, you know, it's like, yeah, none of us are perfect. We all fail all the time at lots of things in life and relationships and whatever. You know, none of us are perfect, but so what? We're all trying to get better all the time, you know. We're all trying to be our best. Ironically, it's a band that I fell out of love with, which might be a topic for another.
Yeah.
But that first album, if you've got any interest in Britpop, Oasis, or any of that kind of era, and you've not heard The Good Will Out by Embrace, please listen to it. You'll love it.
I'm excited.
You'll love it, yeah.
I'm excited about this. This is great. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, here's number one. Steven's number one.
Indeed.
There it is.
Everything flows. I mean, that's off a Catholic education.
Correct, yes, off their debut album. Mm-hmm. I know you'll both be very familiar with that song, and I'm sure you probably both like it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it.
When I first heard Everything Flows, I was like, this is my favourite song now. Nothing can ever replace this as my favourite song. It's amazing, really, because you think, well, all the times I've seen them, only once have they not closed with it.
Wow, is that right?
That's amazing. Every time they close it, apart from one time they open the encore with Everything Flows and close it with a concept, which, I mean, that's pretty good as well. But it's not their best song. They've written far better songs than this. It's not their best. It sounds, and I think Norman or Jerry, one time in the past, they said, you know, that first album sounds like it was recorded in a garage in Bells Hill, because it pretty much was. You know?
Yeah.
It sounds terrible. It's not the greatest performance. You know, the singing's not great. Everything about it doesn't work, apart from the fact that sometimes music just hits you right in your soul. Mm. You know, you cannot. This is why we love music, because you'll come across something that it just grabs hold of your heart and it will not let go. And that's that song for me. It just grabbed me, and it was like, this is the greatest thing I have ever heard in my life. And if I ever hear anything better than this before I die, I'll be surprised.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yeah. Amazing.
Okay. This is awesome. This was really, amazing. Really fun.
Yeah. And, you know, similar to what Stephen was talking about, listening to Neil Young, changing his direction, this top five thing may have changed some of the directions of our patron episodes, because I think a lot of people may want to take up this challenge. Yeah. Maybe they'll do it with albums. That might be interesting, or songs, whatever. But yeah, it could be cool.
I would love
could
to hear it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Stephen. This was quite a lot of fun. And
so enjoyable.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, me too. Enjoyed it.
And if anyone would like to comment on any of these songs, we'd love to hear it. You can call, leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or email us, rock@suburbspod.com, or find us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right. Let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Stephen Routledge.
Talk to you all later.
Well, I think we'll all know that Scott Parks's would all be Robert Pollard songs, don't it? 5, so.